This is On Target St. John's. A look at politics, crime, education. What's happening here with the people who know. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station. Now, your On Target St. John's host, Linda Swain.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. If you recall, last week we spoke with three people involved with the Food Producers Forum. That's a group formed to dedicated to helping to inform the public about food security options, and they're also involved in a number of projects to help improve food security in Newfoundland and Labrador. Unfortunately, breaking news cut the program short just as we were getting going. I promised Chair of the Food Producers Forum and Pooch Cove-based farmer Dan Rubin a return to the show. He's here with me now. Hello.
Hi there, Linda. It's so nice that you have time for this. I'm really glad to be back.
So snow yesterday, more frost tonight.
We drove home through a blizzard. Oh my God, what are we doing here?
Are you wringing your hands with despair?
No, I'm actually looking at my garden, which is quite frost-free at the moment, although it might be cold tonight. And my garlic is a foot and a half high, and my lettuce are doing fine. But it's quite the challenge gardening here, I must say.
It is indeed. But it's those clear nights that are the real killers, I suppose.
Yes, that's when it can get quite cold, and that's why in my garden, and this is something I've been showing people, teaching in the workshops that I've led right up until COVID, is that by protecting your plants, by creating just a little bit of protection from wind and cold, you can actually grow a lot of things here. But we do get those cold nights. You're right about that.
So how do you protect it? Because there's an awful... I'm one of them. I have a little raised garden in the backyard, and last week I got all excited with those warmer temperatures, and
yep.
I started planting like you know what, and now I'm just like, well, great, that's all gone now. So how do you protect them?
There's several different versions of what is actually the very same thing. You build protection, and the way you do that is you create some form of enclosure. Now, I have raised beds, and they're boxes, 7 foot by 3 foot, built out of untreated wood and filled with soil. And what I do is I build a second box exactly the same size and put it on top. And I'm looking out at one now that has a lid with plastic stapled to it and hinges along the windward side. And when I close that lid, you've got this like mini greenhouse. And if you do that, or you create hoops and you put fabric, like remade garden fabric over it, or plastic, or any kind of shower doors are particularly great because they're tempered glass, they're safer to use. Any form of protection that you can create from the wind. But there's also one of the tricks, which is to grow things that like the cold. So that would be salad greens like lettuce and arugula and spinach and chard and kale and bok choy, all of which can be planted here in March, because once the seeds come up, even if it's frosty, they don't mind that. And then there are other things like tomatoes and peppers and cucumbers that you really do need enclosed space, like almost a greenhouse for. But you can create that, and the raised beds are great. You've got a raised bed, right?
I do.
So that's the foundation, and you put some sticks in the ground, or you screw some verticals to that and then some horizontals to those, and you just create a little box, basically, and cover it with plastic, and you're good to go.
Well, I got to get the husband going now.
That's right.
Start doing
the tools.
He has the tools. I don't touch the tools. So there's a whole thing about the tools anyway. So
listen, I'm very glad to be back on, because what's going on right now, whether people know it or not, is there's an enormous change happening in our society here in Newfoundland and Labrador. And the nature of that change is that because of Snowmageddon and because of COVID, it's like a bucket of cold water in the face. It's woken people up. And we now have tens of thousands of new gardeners across the province. And I know that because I talked to my good friend Stephen Lisa McBride, who have a Facebook page called Backyard Farming and Homesteading, and they're now up to 33,000 members.
It's exploded.
And I was at Holland Nursery the other day getting some plants for my own garden, and it was just maggoty with people. So the garden stores are selling out, the seed companies are selling out, and what this is about is that the people, those of us who are the sheeple, the followers, the consumers, the people glued to the tube, now we're becoming producers. And really what that's about here in Newfoundland and Labrador is we're taking back the heritage that we once had. Because in the outports like Pooch Cove, where I live, we used to produce our own food. And we used to ship, Pooch Cove used to ship, according to census records, hundreds of pounds of food into St. John's. So we're taking that back, and this change is happening really fast. And I'd love to share with your listeners some examples of what I know is going on from the several years of work I've been doing here on food security. I'd love to tell people the stories because they're so inspiring.
Well, let's start with some of those stories right after the break. My guest today on Target is Chair of the Food Producers Forum, Dan Rubin. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
And we're back. We're talking to Dan Rubin, Chair of the Food Producers Forum. And Dan, you know that things have changed and are revolutionizing when someone like my own sister texts me with pictures of the pullets that she's raising. So what are some of the stories that are going on out there?
Well, there's lots of stories, and before I get into them, I want to take some time with your indulgence to thank some of the people, because what is happening is that a network is forming across the province to sustain ourselves and create the food that we need. And part of my experience has been that every time I go out to a local company or provider or supplier, they go, yeah, boy, how can I help? And here are some of the people who are helping us with this that I want to mention and thank. I want to thank Heather and Jennifer and Carly at the Governor Pub, where we had our first face-to-face board meeting of the Food Producers Forum in a year, for hosting us there. I want to thank Mr. Brad Hickey at Hickey's Timber Mart, who's been there every step of the way with us, giving us discounts and donating the roof for the Earth Sheltered Greenhouse at the O'Brien Farm. I want to thank John Frecker, who, when I called him at Holland Nursery, said, if you had told me, I would have grown plants for you, who's donating plants for the families for whom we're building raised beds. Luke Janes at the Firewood Factory on Torbay Road, what a great place. Raylene Nichols and Gary Sevier, who are sheep and beef farmers here in a local community, who delivered 10 donated bags of manure for our projects. Brian Yeager, who you spoke to last week, the natural gardener out in Fairyland. Gerard, whoever he is, but he's a manager at Kent Building Supplies, and every time I go in there, he's there to help me and giving me discounts. Jason Koish and Tom Hibbs at New Crete Concrete Suppliers. Every one of our suppliers has given us discounts. These are great guys. John Randall at Massless Foundations and Scott Franklin at AA Construction, who are both pitching in to help us build a greenhouse. So we're building an earth-sheltered greenhouse at the O'Brien Farm in St. John's, the last scrap of remaining farmland in the middle of St. John's, where it will be used as a training facility. And we're doing that in partnership with a wonderful O'Brien Farm Foundation, working with their board chair, Shani Duff, and their board, and Aaron Rogers, the farm manager, and Brian Kowalski, who's on site. And we're building this 14 by 24 foot earth sheltered structure. So I said this last time, I hope this is okay. It's a greenhouse with its arse in the earth. And when you do that, when you build the building into the hillside, the earth insulates it, and the cost of heating it is $5 a month right through the winter. So you can grow food all year round. So that's one of the major projects that got this whole thing started.
So how do you marry the earth shelter with the sunlight that is required? How much of it is poked into the ground?
The back half of it is in the soil. So you either bury it downward in the earth, or in our case, we put it backward into a hillside. And the back wall is concrete, but the concrete is insulated on the back with 2 inches of foam. So that concrete becomes what we would call thermal mass. And The greenhouses that most people build in their backyards now make no sense whatsoever because they're clear on the north side and the sun will never, ever come in the north side. So if you put the north side into the ground and you insulate it, when the sun hits that concrete, it warms it up and it generates enough heat, even on a cloudy day, that you barely need any heat, even in the depths of winter, to grow things like cold-tolerant greens, like I was listing in the earlier segment. But you can grow tomatoes, you can grow figs, you can grow strawberries. David Goodyear has one of these in Flat Rock, and he's eating strawberries right now.
How do you protect it against the elements, wind and, I guess, snow or rainfall?
The nature of the structure is that it is sheltered in the earth. It has a roof which sheds the rain and the snow. It is tightly sealed. Only the south roof and the south wall are transparent. So all of the rest of it is very highly sheltered from the elements. The real puzzle becomes shedding heat and moisture in the summertime. So that's one of the projects we're doing. And let me mention just a couple of others. So let me list these, and you can ask me, because you're there to speak for the listeners, which one I should talk some more about. We have a greenhouse project, of course. We have an outreach project where we said we sent out the word across the island and up to Labrador about 2 months ago that we were looking for other communities who were ready to build an earth-sheltered greenhouse. We thought we'd hear from like half a dozen. We got responses from 26 communities.
That's amazing.
And we picked seven of them to work with, and I'll tell you about the seven. So two of them are family farms, Kingfisher Farm in Gambo on the hillside above the highway, and a farm in Port Blanford. One of them is the Carbonear Food Bank. One of them is a market garden project in Norris Point in Gros Morne. One of them is in the Codroy Valley, a project led by a Mi'kmaq fabric artist and community gardener. But here's the one that I love the best. It's in Kings Point, a little community near Springdale of about 700 people. And the letter of application came from a 14-year-old student named Casey Budgell. And when I called and I talked to Casey, who turned out to be female, student, 14 years old, and her school principal, Ryan Kelly, Ryan said to me, whatever Casey says, she's in charge. And that's exactly what the town council told me. So that project is being led by a 14-year-old school student named Casey Budgell in Kings Point. And I talked to her and I said, so, Casey, what do you have in mind here? And she said, well, we're building our community garden. She said, I got that started. And we've got our raised beds. And now we want to have the greenhouse. We've got the perfect hillside, she says to me. And then I want a community root cellar where we can put the food that we grow. And anybody in the community who needs food can go there and get food. And that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about taking food, which is considered a commodity that you buy if you have the money, and turning it back into a community resource like it always was in the outports.
And so, you told me a little bit more about this story, and I don't mean to tease or jump ahead, but there was a fundraising element here that she surprised you with. What was that?
Oh, that was the maraschino cherry. That was the icing on the cake. I said to her, so Casey, you understand that in this phase, we're getting ready to build. We're not building. We're not giving you guys money to build a greenhouse. We're consulting with you because we need to have a plan in place so we can go out and look for the funding so that you'll have the money to build the greenhouse. But your community will need to raise $10,000. She said to me, oh, no problem. I already did that. I said, what? She said, oh, yes, I applied to this foundation in Toronto, and we've got $10,000 in the bank, and it's good for 2 years. I did that. I went, my God.
You had no idea who you were dealing with, obviously.
And you know, when I talked to the – I attended by Skype, you know, or WebEx or whatever – I attended a meeting of their town council, and the mayor and the council looked at me and they said exactly the same thing as the school principal. Yep, we're gonna blow you out of the water. Casey's in charge. Watch us run. I was so inspired. I was just lifted off my feet, you know. And I think that's one of the things about these stories is that, oh my God, we're in the middle of snowstorms and COVID. We need the good news, right?
Oh, for certain. So they're well on the way in Kings Point by the sounds of it.
Yeah, they're well on the way. And the same thing will be true. But when I stop and I think about the 26, 8 said, well, we're not quite ready. So we had to assess 18 applications from 18 communities all over the place, Port of Basque and Belle Island and Salmonier and just all over the place. And we couldn't do them all. But the truth is that the work that we do with the ones that we selected, the design work will be shared with all of those communities. So they will all have a head start on creating their own food hub. And what I mean when I say food hub is that in a community, whether it's a big place like St. John's or a small place like Kings Point, what we need to do is come together, combine our skills, because between all of us, we've got an incredible collection of skills. We have people who know how to build houses, pour concrete, grow food, organize nonprofit groups, and do this at the community level. And so when people say to me, what's a food hub? I say, well, it's a bunch of people who start a community garden, and then they make a greenhouse, and then, of course, they need a composting center for their community, and then they've got all this food. So then they open a cafe, and I say, and when you know that it has worked is when two old guys are sitting across from each other under the maple tree at the picnic table sipping their coffee, and one of them looks up and says to the other guy, Fred, you know what we need? A choir, right? Because that becomes the hub of the community that rebuilds that pride, which Newfoundlanders and Labradorians rightly should have in their heritage, in their history, in their identity. And then you're launched, and then you're gone, and it's happening.
We've been talking a lot about growing food, but there's another movement afoot, as is clear in the backyard homesteading and farming Facebook page, and that has to do with farming, raising animals, animal husbandry, and like I was mentioning before, raising a few pullets and that sort of thing. I want to talk to you a little bit about that when we come back after the break, and just to see if municipalities are on board with that kind of thing, because it often creates a little bit of conflict in communities from time to time. I want to see if municipalities are a little more open-minded to that. When we come back after the break, my guest today is Dan Rubin, chair of the Food Producers Forum. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
We're back. Chair of the Food Producers Forum, Dan Rubin, is my guest today. We were talking a lot about growing things, and I know there's a lot of things you want to talk about, but I want to talk about raising your food. Are we doing a lot of that here, and how does that work? And are municipalities getting better at, addressing that?
The simple answers are yes and no, and I'll get into the details now. So where I live, I have a neighbor who has chickens and goats, and she's lucky in that they've been here for a long time. So she gets to keep them. But just about anywhere else on recreational property, you're not allowed to keep what the town plan or the regulations call livestock. And that's a real issue, because what we need to do is to restore our capacity to produce food, and that depends on soil fertility. And soil fertility depends on returning organic material to the soil, whether it be fish bones or waste or manure. So the animals play a critical role in returning these materials to the soil. And without the animals, you can't really regenerate soil and farm sustainably. And I live in a basically vegetarian house. I'm the resident carnivore, so I'm the one who tends to eat the animals more. But regardless of whether you eat the animals or not, they need to be there. And the problem is that the municipalities no longer allow or support this. In fact, one of my partners, Dr. Nick Fairbridge, at the Faculty of Medicine at Memorial, was so interested with the dialogue happening on backyard farming and homesteading that he did a little research project, and he collected all of the municipal plans from every municipality in this province, and he studied them and analyzed them, and with three exceptions, every one of them embeds language from a British planning document written in 1947. That's how out of date the regulations are. And so there's a complete contradiction between the lip service paid to rural character, heritage, sustainability, climate change, food security, and the fact that the regulations don't let you actually do any of that. So there needs to be a change in thinking, both at the provincial and at the municipal level. And the way we're hoping to help address that is by holding a conference this year or early next year and have some public forums where people can talk about this. And then we can bring the municipal governments and the provincial government the real data about the amount of food we need and how it can be produced at the community level and ask them to just get out of the way or get on board, because right now they either don't see it or they don't understand it because they're not supporting it. They are blocking it. And there's all kinds of stories. If you've been online, you've seen the stories, right, Linda, about the people being stopped from keeping chickens in Widless Bay or whatever it might be.
Oh, indeed. And we're telling those stories all the time here in the newsroom when people reach out and say, hey, this is what's going on here. Is this fair? My understanding from some of those past stories is that the city of St. John's actually is among the more progressive when it comes to that sort of thing.
Absolutely. You can keep chickens in your backyard as long as it's three and you have a proper enclosure for them in St. John's, but you can't in Pooch Cove or Widless Bay. I mean, it's crazy what's going on here. And it's just a legacy of thinking based on the past that hasn't changed yet. And the thing about it is, when you get down to the real issue of food security, initiatives like cold storage or let's grow more potatoes in Western Newfoundland and Labrador really are not going to make a significant change. The real change is already happening, and it's happening at the grassroots level. And here's one example that I can give you. Okay, so we have 125 community gardens, and I have to credit the province for providing the funding to inspire many of those communities to get started, because they now offer $750 grants to community gardens. And those 125 community gardens have an average of about 30 members. Some are larger, some are smaller. So what we're looking at in just the community gardens is more than 3,000 gardeners across the province, each of whom, and I'm looking out at my backyard and the raised beds, each of whom probably can grow, let's say, 200 pounds of food a year, no sweat. So we're talking about somewhere between 600,000 and 800,000 pounds of food being produced, these are vegetables, right, at the community garden level alone. Now, Newfoundlanders eat more moose than beef, so there's hunting, and then there's fishing, there's the so-called recreational or food fishery, and then there's foraging, berries and mushrooms and wild plants, which is a real expanding thing. So we're likely producing 2 million pounds of food per year already at the community level, and that's where we can rapidly expand food security. But it's not on the province's map. There is no solid information yet about what's being produced at the community level. So one of the projects we have on the go is that we have two co-op students right now who have been hired through Memorial to do interviews across the province, and hopefully by the fall we will be able to put in the government's face some real data on the food already being grown at the community level. And then we can ask the obvious questions like, so can we keep some chickens, please?
That's a a very important part of this conversation, because it seems to me that we've always sort of had this disconnect when it comes to what the province is saying, the provincial government is saying about increasing our agricultural capacity and the amount of food we raise. But traditionally, we always had this sort of small scale. We never had these, you know, we did have some larger farms, of course, but we never had this large scale agricultural development like you see in places like Ontario, Quebec, Nova Scotia, you know, Saskatchewan. We never had those huge, you know, industrial-type farming operations here. They were always sort of small scale. Even the bigger ones were smaller scale. The answer is right before us, but we somehow are looking beyond it.
Yeah, there's something about what government does or about modern times. And there's some wonderful, wonderful people in the agri-foods department that we're working with who are really working on the things that you and I are talking about. And they're committed and they've been there for years and they have my huge admiration. But at the larger administrative level and right up to the cabinet and the premier, we need a wake-up call about the fact that our real capacity for food production is the same place it has always been, and that's at the community level. So if I walk up toward where the East Coast Trail starts on its way to Cape St. Francis from where I live along the water here, I pass these piles of rock. And those piles of rock are there because the fields were cleared and people grew food. Right along the shore here, there used to be a flock of 1,200 sheep roaming the hills of Pooch Cove. So that's kind of lost in the past. But one of the ways we're so lucky here in this province is that it was only lost a short time ago. It wasn't lost 100 years ago. And in a way, it's not lost at all. Looking down the hill toward the bottom of the road that I live in, I see the field where my friends Roy and Ted have planted their potatoes. In the outports, people still know how to do this, just like they know how to build a house or build a boat or you know, repair a fence. Those skills are there, and we need to pass them on to the next generation, along with fishing traditions and hunting traditions and that, so that we retain this capacity to grow our own food. But I agree with you that the animals are a big part of this, and we need to clear the way so that people can once again keep a goat or some chickens or ducks or a pig, because the pig can eat the scraps, and we need to be recycling all of this stuff, you know, and using it.
So the municipalities have to be on board.
Yeah, and I think there's a wonderful opportunity for that, even though in recent years the Association of Municipalities has set the standard for not allowing animals through sensible dialogue that can be turned around, because it's really just a matter of common sense. But what we're hoping to do, as I mentioned, is get together the solid information that can inform those decisions. But you know what? There's another aspect of this, too, that the animals are part of, and that is composting. So one of our board members on Food Producers Forum, a lovely friend of mine, Viviana Ramirez Luna, who is an ecologist originally from South America, now has a project going in St. John's, a community composting initiative. And there's a similar project being done out in Corner Brook by Katie Temple and the Western Environment Center, because a lot of what we throw away, a lot of what most of us are sending to the dump is good stuff that should be going back into the soil. So we really need some composting programs set up here at the community level, because even though we live on the rock, soil is something we can create. And as I often say in my workshops, garden workshops, you don't grow food in dirt. Dirt is what you wash out of your clothes in the laundry. What you grow in is soil, and soil is alive. And the reason it's alive is that you feed it, and you feed it all the waste products that result from the life around us. And to the extent that you can compost your garden waste and your kitchen waste, and there's ways to do that without having problems with smell or rats or that, then we're going to be able to create the soil that we need to grow the food that will keep us healthy.
I have to say, I used to compost when I lived downtown some years ago, and never had a hitch with it. But I was very careful about what I put in there, and I got some great soil out of it.
That's really neat to hear, and I think a lot of people need to hear that. I appreciate you mentioning that, because it's the same thing as when people go out in their garden. They go, "Ooh, there's an ant. How do I kill it?" Well, for God's sake, chill out. You know, that insect belongs there, and it's helping aerate the soil. And a lot of people are fearful of composting, right? Because they're worried about, you know, rodents and the smell. But as you just said, Linda, if you do it properly, it's not a problem.
And you get that fresh soil smell that's so intoxicating.
Yeah, the key in our climate is to keep it slightly warm, to cover it over, put maybe a covering or a roof over it, keep it moist, mix the greens and the browns thoroughly, the nitrogen and the carbon, and to aerate it, because if you have aerobic bacteria breaking it down, you don't get the bad smells. It's the anaerobic, the wet, sludgy stuff that smells bad. But you aerate it. You know, you poke holes in it. It's
exactly.
Not hard.
It's not hard. It just takes a little tiny bit of time, not a lot.
What I've been learning this from the people that I do the workshops, is that it's really about confidence. I mean, we need to be willing to try stuff and make mistakes and move beyond it, because when we do that, the discoveries you make are amazing.
And I'm
learning all the time. One of the problems here is the white butterflies that lay the eggs that eat the cabbage, and your cabbage is stripped, and you go, oh, my God. And I thought I knew how to take care of that by covering my plants with garden fabric. But sure enough, I walked down the loop, and there were these enormous cabbages. And I said to the old fellow, well, what did you do? How did you keep it? He said, oh, I go down to the chuck, and I get the salt water, and once a week I water with the salt water. That's all you need to do. There's traditional knowledge here that is priceless, priceless.
My guest today on Target is Dan Rubin. He's the chair of the Food Producers Forum. I want to ask you a little bit about the Newfoundland-grown food map when we come back.
Thank you.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
And we're back. My guest today is Dan Rubin, chair of the Food Producers Forum. We're talking all things food here today because we didn't get a chance to talk about them as extensively as we were hoping to last week. So you're working on something called the NL Grown Food Map. What is that?
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about that, and then I want to get into how people who are listening can get involved in these projects. So a wonderful woman named Nancy Windsor, who's from this province, came back home from Ontario, and she's working here, and she looked around and went, like, in Ontario, you go out and there's the farms, there's the food. She says, where's the food? So she took it into her head to create a map of all the farms and other food sources. She was going to do that originally just for the Avalon Peninsula, but then she got a hold of us at the Food Producers Forum. And I said, oh, well, we've got a graduate student who can compile a list for you. Why don't we help you? And now, access through our website, Food Producers Forum, F-O-R-U-M, forum.com, you can access the NL Grown Food Map. And we actually have new funding to create a website of its own for the NL Grown Food Map. And it's a map of about 200 farms, 100 and something community gardens, butchers. So it's where the local food is, to make it easier for people who want healthy local food to find the food.
Now, what else is it you wanted to talk about?
Okay, so to find all of that and to access the 180 pages of content about gardening and growing and food distribution, you go to foodproducersforum.com and join us. Sign up for the newsletter there. But one of the projects that I'm working on, and we were talking about this the last time that Brian and Debbie and I were on, is the Guerrilla Garlic Gardeners Project. And that's a crazy scheme that started with an idea from my dear friend, Sandy Kosser, of building raised beds for families that really need the food and planting them to garlic. But we have our funding, and it's not the right time of the year. Garlic goes on in the fall. So we're going to build raised beds for 10 single-parent families here in St. John's and fill them with good quality soil. And between the donations and the funding we raised, we have everything we need to do that. But we need some help. we need somebody with a truck or a van to help us out on Saturday, June 19th, because we've got to move our materials from the firewood factory where they're stored to the places where we're building raised beds. And we also realized when we went out to the first of these families in Shea Heights a couple of days ago that in addition to the beds, these people who are first-time gardeners will need mentorships, right? They'll need to work with an experienced gardener. And I'm an experienced gardener, but I can't be everywhere. So we're looking for some senior, experienced gardeners who would like to partner with a family with many kids, a single-parent family, and help the woman or the man with the kids grow the food in their brand-new garden. So if anybody's interested in helping with either of those things, they can email me at foodproducersforum@gmail.com, and we'll plug them in. But in general, what is happening here, the stuff we've been talking about, is happening because of partnerships, right? This is really, even more than it's being about food or health, it's about people coming together in community. I mean, it's overwhelming to me. I don't know what to say. We've had support from the Memorial University Office of Public Engagement, the Botanical Garden, the Faculty of Medicine, the Faculty of Engineering, the Faculty of Business, the Community Foundation of NL, the O'Brien Farm, Food First, the College of the North Atlantic, the Western Environment Center out in Corner Brook, Common Ground Community Development, two federal grants, the Federation of Agriculture. We haven't had any provincial funding yet, but we've got great buy-in and support from people at AgriFoods. This is an extensive partnership that's being knitted together from bits and pieces. And I was talking to a fellow named Mark who arrived on his bicycle one day to help us work on the greenhouse at the O'Brien Farm. And he phoned me today and he said, you know, we're all in our separate little places and we need to get together and work together. Maybe we can't do everything at once. We need to get together and start in a few places and really do it and then expand from there. And that's the basic concept. And there's many, many opportunities. Even if you don't have a van or you're not a senior gardener, if you want to help out, well, email us and we'll figure out how to plug you in. Because the things that are happening now at the community level are astonishing.
Is this a fad or a trend? I know when the pandemic struck and we were taken out of that reverie where we're continually, just moving, going back and forth to work, dropping the kids off here, doing this, doing that, run. And all of a sudden we had nowhere to go to and we started to become a little more grounded. Do you think this is a fad or a trend?
It's not a fad and it's not even a trend. It's a wake-up call. Our planet as a whole is in major, dire situation because of what we've done to the planet as humans with our so-called development. And the word is out. And it's very discouraging. You know, I have grandchildren. It's very worrying. And it's so interesting to find out that the simple act of growing your own food can make a tremendous difference. Because every one of those oranges and heads of broccoli that you buy at Dominion or Sobeys or Costco has probably traveled thousands of miles, right? And there's a cost in that. And if you really boil it down to the bones, this is what it's about. It's about the fact that we have forgotten our place in nature. We have forgotten that we are animals and that we're part of the living world. There is no environment. That's a weasel word. It's an illusion because environment is something out there, separate from us, and there is no separate. We are in the garden, and the garden is in us. So it's not a fad, and it's not a trend. It's a wake-up call. We have limited time, and the wonderful thing about this is that these little things that seem so small that we do in our own backyards, like growing food or keeping a chicken, make a real difference because they add up. And our whole province, if we wanted to, we could go from 90% imported food to 20% imported food in 3 years if people pulled it together, and it will be the people, the communities leading, not the government. The government will follow, but we must lead.
Dan Rubin, I can't think of any better words to end the show on. I really appreciate your time this afternoon. Very informative.
Oh, Linda, I appreciate talking with you. You know, when I talk with you or when I talk with Patty Daly, we're telling personal stories, like you about your composting or him about his grandfather who grew carrots. And this is really what it's about. This is wonderful. Thank you. I appreciate it.